Welcome to On Course, the teaching ministry of Pastor Hart Ramsey, where we offer simple biblical insight into some of life's most pressing issues.
What if I told you that a lot of the pain and difficulty and adversity you're experiencing is simply God aligning your now so you could be prepared for your tomorrow?
Prepare for the next few minutes to be encouraged, enlightened, and inspired. Let's join Pastor Ramsey and get on course. What's going on, good people? Welcome to another edition of On Course with Hart Ramsey. Of course, we call these sessions Heart to Heart. You get to hear from the heart of God by way of the man of God. I am Gerard Bonner from all things Bonnerfied Media. And of course, we're hanging out with the one, the only, the legend, doctor, apostle, pastor, whatever titles we want to call him, Pastor Hart Ramsey. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Gerard. Let's go. What you got?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to everybody. I don't know that I realized how much noise people were going to make when we made our kind of comeback episode of sorts. Like, people just, I mean, went crazy, which I like that. I like that. That means that this has been good to you. So there are a couple of obviously big topics that are out there. But one I want to get to before we get into all the other stuff everybody wants to get into is this. Congratulations, you got a new church.
Hunger, like, Church.
let's talk about that, because this is a big move. Talk about, yeah, Hunger Church.
Well, Hunger Church, first of all, it's a lot of story behind it. But when I first came to Atlanta, this was the first thing that I shared with everyone. It's a vision that the Lord gave to me. That's in 2018, December 31st, that I actually worked out or talked through with a couple people who were knowledgeable of what the Lord was leading me to do and all this stuff. So when I came to Atlanta, there's a lot of, of course, you know, I came into the All Nations Expression. And when Apostle decided to go in a different direction, it left us all with a decision. What are we going to do? And so out of this was born the vision that I had for Hunger Church Atlanta. And it's going to be incredible. The whole thing is that if you have a passion for something, right, you become better at it. I think we're not good at serving the Lord because we lost our passion for that. Hunger, wow, Church is going to be about restoring that passion, and not just in one area, but in just serving the Lord, bringing it back, reducing everything back to simplistic, serving the Lord, enjoying our faith, making it. I mean, we probably won't do some of the things that other people are doing, but we're gonna do. But it's, see what it's gonna you be did enjoyable. You caught that, okay? Yeah. I didn't want to go there, but you know.
Yeah.
So yes. We're gonna keep it like within a certain guideline. You know, and I want to speak to that. You want to jump?
Let's go.
So of course, there's the big news in Atlanta about what happened at Dream Centers. And I've called Dream Centers because I know Bishop Murphy. I respect him. I love him. I've ministered there, their way of community building during their watch night service. Before I go into what I thought about it, I want to say this. Part of the responsibility of a good church is doing cultural life together. Mm-hmm. It's biblical.
Yeah.
When you go to Galatians chapter 2, when Paul confronted Peter, everyone knows about the fact that Paul rebuked Peter before everyone else. But what they don't know is the setting. Mm. They were in a Gentile setting. Imagine a family reunion type of setting where they had prayer and everything as they were eating, but they were dancing, they were doing everything else. And Peter's standing back like, yo, I don't know if this is, you know, I don't know if I would do this. And Paul rebukes him. Mm. Peter didn't start doing that until some of the other brothers came from Jerusalem, from the Jerusalem church, and they see how the Gentiles were getting down. And Peter was getting down with them until James and the people from the other church came. Mm. And Peter stood back so much that Barnabas, who was all in, Barnabas was probably sweating from dancing. And when he saw Peter pull back, he pulled back too. And Paul rebuked me, said, wait a minute, you were enjoying this before these people came. Mm-hmm. Call them hypocrites. Now, that's the inbounds version of it, right? I think personally that it was his responsibility to have some type of dancing at midnight. We did, at NCC, when I was in Dothan, Montgomery, we did it all the time.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the fellowship, the sanctuary dome, we have church. We'll start the party in there. I'm not talking about forget the type of music. It's normally would start out at gospel, but by the time you got into the fellowship hall, they were playing line dance music.
Yeah.
And I was, of course, I can't dance. So my thing is I'm too holy to dance. That's a joke. But I just can't dance. But if I could dance, I probably would have done what he done. Maybe not the choice of song,
mm-hmm.
but we got to. So the question, the problem that a lot of people have, Gerard, is is the song.
Hmm.
And you know what's interesting? A friend of mine actually produced this song years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know the song. I didn't know the lyric of the song. Mm-hmm. I would not have chosen the song. Mm-hmm. It probably went further than he expected it to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of argument for that, right? But it is the story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it right? I understood what he was going for.
Yeah.
I just would not have went that far.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting. I think you said something that's very wise, and that is different churches have different expressions for the communities that they serve.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to understand that, because what can happen is we can impose what worked or what we're accustomed to in our community mm-hmm. onto another community, and it doesn't necessarily fit. So I remember when I was in Virginia, there was a church that I went to. I guess I can call their name. It's not that big of a deal. Wave Church. I've talked about Wave Church before. And there were a couple of major adjustments that I had to make when I got there. The first of which was that they didn't have a watch night service. Like,
right.
They didn't. And I didn't know what to do with myself. Like, what do you mean by we don't have a watch night? Like, what is going on? You know? Right. You know, well, then on top of that, I remember they had a major conference that they would do every year. And literally right after the conference in the hall, in the vestibule, fellowship hall, whatever you want to call it, in that atrium lobby area was full party. I mean, DJ, all the things. And what I realized is their community works well that way. And my measurement for is this good, is this not good is, okay, but how would worship be?
Right.
Right. How was worship? Were people getting saved? Were lives being changed? And all the boxes were checked every time.
Right.
So it then had me start to think, okay, so are these issues of sin or issues of preference?
Mm.
And so I had to go, these are issues of preference. You know, right. Some of them might, you know, sip alcoholic beverages at varying times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Wasn't my thing per se, right. But I wasn't going to then turn around and dog that church. I mean, I remember we did very unorthodox things.
Right.
I remember one Easter, we literally did an entire Easter service based on Beatles songs.
Right.
And the whole, yeah. And the thing I was trying to figure out was, okay, how is all of this going to work? Because I'm in the music department and I'm trying, all right, you want us to teach these songs? Okay, I got no idea how this is going to work. And I remember people showing up in droves, A, to service, and B, when it came time for altar call. So for me, it's understanding what works for one community may not work for another community.
Right.
The question is, what are the results? And I don't know that people even thought about what the results were.
So the results we heard was 150 people gave their life to Christ, whatever.
Right.
So I want to kind of segue to this.
Yeah.
But I think what believers miss, there's so many teaching points in this. The first one is this. What you bait your hook with is a part of the wisdom of catching fish.
Yes.
Right? What you bait your hook with. I could disagree with your bait. I went fishing with some guys one time, and they would use nothing but live bait.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they would speak ill of the people who use synthetic bait.
Wow.
I went fishing with some people that use synthetic bait, and they caught more fish, real live fish, than the people who fishing, because the people who were fishing with the live bait were more committed to their live bait than to the fish they were catching.
Wow.
And the people who were fishing with synthetic bait were more committed to catching more fish to share with their family.
Right.
So I think there's an issue. The second thing, Gerard, that I think is important, and this is going to blow people's minds. When someone does something that you disagree with, forget that. When someone does something that is sin, mm-hmm. you have the option of either condemning them mm-hmm. or just simply disagreeing and taking it before the Lord. Mm-hmm. The woman in John chapter 8, I'm going to tell you what's crazy about John chapter 8, the woman caught in adultery. I got a lot to say about this. Here's number one. Do you know that story is not found in many of the old manuscripts?
Didn't know that.
And so because of that, people start saying, well, the story was added. No, it actually happened. But here's what happened. The scribes so disagreed with the idea that the Messiah will show mercy to a woman taken in the very act of adultery, that when it was time to copy the text, they would not add it.
Wow.
Some of the manuscripts have that story tacked on to the end of the book of John. Some moved it to the book of Luke, but they didn't want to put it in the book of John that showed Jesus to be the Messiah, because in their judgmental religious minds, these scribes, who had no authority to remove it, remove it out of the text, because they cannot see that this cannot be true. But it's a true narrative in the history and life of Jesus, right? But because they are so condemnation minded, even Jesus, this is the part that gets me about the story. She was caught in the very act. Mm-hmm. She never said if she wasn't. No one was there to prove that she wasn't. The right. evidence was stacked against her. Jesus, at the end of this thing, says, he that was without sin cast the first stone. Because when the first stone is thrown, then all the other witnesses must take stone and stone the woman too. Mm-hmm. There was no one to throw the first stone. Why? Because everybody was guilty. That's the first thing of something. Right. The second thing is Jesus looks up at the woman. He says, woman, where are those thine accusers? Doth no man condemn thee? Hmm. No one sentenced you to death? She said, no man, Lord. He said, well, neither do I condemn you. Wait, God in the flesh tells this woman caught in the very act of adultery. It's a worse sin than dream. If the dream sinners thing was a sin, to me it was an error in judgment. But if it's a sin, if you think they went out there saying we're going to sin against God, and you went to condemn a whole congregation of people, you're judgmental, super spiritual, self-righteous. We have the choice to either show grace and pray and have conversation, or condemn and write them off and call them false.
Right.
And I'll tell you something, the church is horrible. Do you know that the opposite of justification is condemnation?
Mm.
It's in the Bible.
Mm.
The opposite of justification is condemnation. The opposite of righteousness is condemnation. The opposite of righteousness is not sin. The opposite of righteousness is condemnation.
Wow.
Because both righteousness and condemnation are results. Righteousness is the result of when I give my life to Jesus Christ, he gives me his righteousness. When I commit sin, the result is condemnation, right?
Wow.
I condemn myself first. If the Bible says whatever is not done of faith is sin, if he did that in faith and he chose the wrong song,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it's one thing for the world to say, the world goes, oh, I can't believe they played that in church. The world doesn't understand God, which is interesting. The world is, the head of the world is the devil. He's the God of the world. Yeah. But for the church to chime in again, I would not have chosen that song.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily because I can't dance. Secondly, because the lyrics part would have freaked me out. The lyrics were too against what I believe theologically and philosophically. But I think the church tries to find too many reasons to kill everybody. And it's always the loudest. Why you got to go to social media?
Hmm.
Why you know who had a conversation with them?
Right.
And then they claim they're fulfilling the righteousness of God by taking to social media and being loveless. I'm sick of them. I hate it here.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about the social media piece, which I find to be so intriguing, is and our mutual friend Brandon Clack talked about this, about how the language of success in social media is going viral.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have to acknowledge one of the reasons that we use social media to make a particular point is for the reaction.
Yeah.
If there's no reaction, most people either take that post down or whatever. But the more reaction it gets, the more the algorithm does what it does. It gets in front of people and we like seeing it all go off. We just all love that. And so it's intriguing to me that so many people feel the need to put it there instead of having healthy conversations about And I don't even know what it would be about at this point, because in the Christian world, sometimes things get so absolute. It's a question of, is it sin? Is it not? Not whether or not it's a preference, because there are things that are preferences that aren't sins that I, for instance, the church I grew up in was an apostolic church that did not believe that women should wear pants or makeup or jewelry or any of that kind of thing. But then there were other churches in that same denomination, an organization that believed otherwise. Right. To the point where it went to like a national vote, which I think is just nuts. But there are people who are trying to determine, are you saved or not, by whether or not a woman wears pants or skirt. Right. Like, these are preferences. These are not. So here's the question I want to get to. How can we, because it seems as though every week the church is in an embroiled discussion about something extreme. I mean, literally the week before that, it was something else. And the week before that, it was something else. And the week before that. How do you think the church can graduate to a space where conversations about these kinds of issues end up being healthy conversations and end up being conversations about preference versus division?
Yeah. So I think social media has kind of given everyone a soapbox. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own following. And so the opinion is now king.
Yeah.
The opinion is, opinion is the most, just like, for example, we have to bathe our bodies every day because of interaction with the world. Mm-hmm. Our souls need cleansing.
Yeah.
And stink that comes from our body, we could identify with it, okay? Normal human functions. But the stink that comes from our souls, one of the stink is negative thoughts and opinion. Opinion is the foulness of it can be the foulness of our souls, because it's not, an opinion is not based in truth. Normally it's not based in facts. It's just based on the way I see it.
Right.
And the way you see it can be skewed based on the lens you're using, based on the trauma you're working through, based on your unhealed trauma, based on your unforgiveness, based on your personal experience. Like, there's some people, you mentioned the word victim, and they go into, they put up walls and they go into some kind of avenger mode because something happened to them that they never quite settled. But so when you mention anything that seems to be against them, they want to come at you. They would burn a relationship down over a word. Okay. Right. So my heart about this, Gerard, is that I think that we need to start as pastors bringing conversations back to our houses and say, okay, they did this over there, right? Use as a teaching point. Here's what I think. Right. Here's what they thought. Here's what the word of God says. So we're going to pray for them. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let the Lord reveal. I'll tell you something. 9 times out of 10, when a believer misses it, it's either an area where we're not developing. Mm-hmm. It's either immaturity, insensitivity, mm-hmm. right? Or it's an area of compromise. Mm-hmm. Either way, what happens to a lot of believers is when something happens, the first thing we charge people with is intentional compromise. I'm a pastor and I've done things. We just didn't have social media back then. I've done similar things to this. Mm-hmm. I started the lyrics to a song one Sunday morning in church. Church was packed, right? I didn't expect them to sing the whole song. I was using the lyrics as a part of my message, and the congregation starts singing and won't stop. They took over, and I didn't know what to do. I was up there laughing. I was in front of the pulpit. I was like, I said, okay, y'all. I started joking. Y'all ain't saved. They kept singing.
Wow.
And it was embarrassing to me as a leader. And I said to myself, note to self, don't do that again, because they're going to take over the song.
Yeah.
And then when it got done, I went back to the message, changed the message. No one was worse off.
Right.
Because that moment happened. Because the fact, what was more important? They were singing it together and they felt a sense of camaraderie. It's something it was a part of their past. It was a part of, and I watched them. It was a Temptation song. Mm-hmm. The lyrics were a little bit, but still the lyrics weren't speaking of biblical truth.
Right.
Right. I think what has to happen to us is that we have to be compassionate enough and merciful enough to ascribe to people, let people be as human as we are. Mm-hmm. Man, that thing went left, man. I believe it went left. And I think that as a pastor, the intent was, the Bible says, whatsoever is not done of faith is sin. Mm-hmm. If you don't do it in faith, it's sin. So it may be sin to you because you think it's wrong. But if he didn't think it's wrong, he did it in faith, then God may have to bring him up to a certain level. Mm-hmm. And or not, God may need to bring us up to a certain level.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because in the book of Romans, they talk about the vegan or the vegetarian says, to eat meat is wrong. And the Bible, when Paul talks about it, Paul says, the people that won't eat meat, he calls them weak in the faith. Mm. You would think eating meat is weak. Paul said, no, it's the other way around. You don't have enough faith to eat meat.
Wow.
So it may be we don't have enough faith to dance the beats. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying we're not the Lord. And I don't reduce a person's. One lady on my post called him false. I said, you called him a false pastor because of one. What about all? Because of one song.
Wow. Check this out.
One song makes him a false pastor. Then what about all the albums full of spiritual, healthy, uplifting, inspiring songs that he did? They count for nothing? That's right. The way we think as Christian. You could do one thing wrong and erase your entire salvation, your entire legacy, but you do a thousand things right and they give you no credit. It's wickedness. It's not the spirit of God, and they need to repent.
Yeah.
I think I just soapbox them.
Well, that's what this is here for, right?
I went on a rant.
Yeah. More of our heart-to-heart conversation is on the way. Stay tuned. Imagine being filled with a peace so deep that the world around you can't touch it. Pastor Hart Ramsey is on a mission to help believers understand what it means to have a healthy prayer-based relationship with God. He's doing that through his book, Seeking Answers, Finding Rest Through Prayer. In this book, you'll learn how to ensure your relationship with God is based on a new and improved covenant, which dangerous prayer habits to avoid, and what to do when prayer doesn't yield the answers you want. It's time to trust God enough to make your prayer life truly about Him. Pick up your copy of Seeking Answers, Finding Rest Through Prayer from Hart Ramsey today. Available now on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold.
Why, yeah!
Have you subscribed to Hart Ramsey's Uplift? It's his national text message service where daily you can hear from the heart of God by way of the man of God, Pastor Hart Ramsey. To receive this daily encouragement, text the word UPLIFT to the number 334-310-4278. Again, text the word UPLIFT to the number 334-310-4278. Uplift your spirit, encourage your heart, and empower your walk. Subscribe today to Hart Ramsey's UPLIFT. Do you love this podcast? There are several ways you can show it. You can share your love for this podcast on the socials and use the hashtag OnCourseHartRamsey or Heart to Heart. That's H-A-R-T, the number 2, H-E-A-R-T. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and now you can find us on Spotify. So if you rock with Spotify, it's an easy way to access us. Search for On Course with Hart Ramsey and subscribe. Thank you so much for your continued support and keep listening to On Course with Hart Ramsey. Stay connected with Pastor Hart Ramsey on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Hart Ramsey. Let's go back into today's heart-to-heart conversation featuring Pastor Hart Ramsey. But I think that is so interesting because people's memories are very, very short when it comes to other people in terms of extending grace, you know? So, I mean, in this particular case, you're right. How many songs have these same people worshipped over, been encouraged through, you know, used as their anthems time and time again? But then this one moment that some people may disagree with now is the measuring stick for his entire existence and everything he does and touches. But if it was them and they had a lapse in judgment, mm-hmm. and they did something, and it's highly likely that most of the people who are criticizing this have done things far more egregious than this, you know, they just didn't have somebody video recording it and putting it on the socials and things like that. They want people to extend grace, mm-hmm. you know, which I just think is so wild. So let me ask this, because there are so many, I can't believe it's 2024 already, and already, like, we're not a week in, people haven't even started their Daniel fast yet, and we are in this space already. There's another video that's out there, not church related, that already, as of right now, has about 6 million views connected to it, and it's just phenomenal. I haven't even watched the whole thing. The clips are just crazy. My question, though, is I take this situation, I take some of the others, and I ask this question: what is the fascination that we as human beings, as believers or not, have with other people's lives and other people's business? Now, if we had been doing this sometime last year, it would have been the conversation about Will Smith and Jada and how much they revealed about each other. And like, there's always going to be a topic to throw in. What is the fascination that people have with other people's lives and business such that they just can't let it go?
Yeah. But, you know, I think people, first of all, people are easily distracted. One of my followers this morning said they have the attention span of a goldfish. Mm-hmm. We are so fascinated with people's closets and people's pains and stories behind the scenes. And I think what it is, Gerard, is that because our own lives are so jacked up. Ooh. When people are merciless towards those who have been exposed, it means that they themselves have been somewhat successful in hiding the chapters of their lives that they don't want people to read, or the portions of their lives that are not fit for public consumption. And they get and to get off on seeing people exposed and humiliated. Humiliation is a weapon of the enemy. It is designed to break you down to the point where you don't have the shoulders to carry your assignment correctly.
Wow. Wow.
It's designed to break you down, to shame you down to the point where you cannot carry your assignment properly enough to be successful. And what happens to people that we don't even realize, this crowd mentality, this mob mentality, crucify him, man. Mm-hmm. Well, these people in this crowd, there weren't about so many people living in Jerusalem. So that means these people used to be a part of the crowd that was fed.
Right.
What happens is once society, and I noticed something, you know, when as Cat Williams made commentary about specific comedians that he was at odds with, or he felt that they did him wrong. Right. There were people who used to be on those people's pages celebrating them, now throwing stones at them, saying, "I believe Cat," and I believe, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they're fully invested in this meaningless exchange that is all strife between unsaved people. Mm. Now all these believers are so invested in this all strife to the point where they don't even realize, watch this, it's costing them bandwidth.
Right.
It's costing them focus. It's distraction. It's misdirection. It is sleight of hand. The enemy points you to this so he can. Do they not know that when the enemy brings a story on the forefront like this and gets you fully engaged in that, is because he's sneaking behind your back? He may be attacking your children. He may be attacking your credibility. He may be attacking your job. He may be attacking your church. You don't know what he's attacking. What is he going after? The rule is, if I see where the enemy is bringing his attack, I know where God is releasing grace. Right?
Right.
The enemy only attacks where God is releasing grace. But if I'm distracted all the time at people's skirts being lifted over their heads, or people's impropriety, or people's failures, or people misbehavior, whatever, then I'm always focused on something other than what God put under my purview, my jurisdiction, my responsibility. Mm-hmm. I saw this thing with this video. I watched the first quarter of it, first 25%.
Okay.
And I couldn't watch anymore. And it's not that I couldn't watch anymore because I'm better, or it wasn't that. It's just that I got to the place where I was like, you know, he's drunk, first of all. He was drunk. Second of all, this is interesting. When there was tabloid revelations about him, I turned my head. Mm. So when he was always in the tabloids, they were always dogging him out. I looked away.
Yeah.
Out of respect for him, I remember him being moved. I respect his art. Yeah. So I didn't want to hear his story.
Yeah.
Out of respect for him. So for me to sit and watch him tear people down, expose people in a mean, bitter, petty spirit. And I want to go a step further. Mm-hmm. There's something going on in the world today where men are getting on social media and revealing the business about other men like they're teenage girls. What happened to the masculinity? What happened to a bro code or something like that? You mean tell me it's demonic. Mm. And so now watch this. And a friend of mine said, well, men have always talked like that. But it wasn't cool in the bro code. And it's like you didn't go out there just talking.
Right.
I'm not saying that we cover up people's misbehavior. I'm saying you got whole rappers out there talking junk about each other. When did this start? Right? Mm-mm-mm. So from circling back around, for me, I think the big issue is we have become, we fetishize people's failures, people's exposures, people's weaknesses, people's stories and we do it because if they become small, it makes us feel big. Can you imagine a person who've accomplished a lot is up here, and all of a sudden he's brought down to earth. Now he's beneath you. You who think that you're nothing. You've always seen yourself as nothing. Now you get a chance to spit in the face or kick dirt on a person that everyone looked up to. It gives people a demonic sense of power. Mm. Yeah.
Ooh,
that's a lot.
But it's accurate. One of the thoughts that comes to mind, I know someone who it explains, you know, what we call certain guilty pleasures in certain television shows. And I remember asking somebody, what is your fascination with this particular show? And the answer is always the same. It makes me feel better about where I am. And I'm just like, what?
TV does that.
it does that. And it's so wild to me. So let me ask, there's two thoughts in my head. I don't know which one we'll go with, but let's go with this one. Part of the reason, like you said, that people engage in this type of behavior is because they don't feel good about their own lives or they're not confident about the life that they have. I know one of the things that I had been dealing with certainly in 2023 is around confidence, you know, and how as believers and as people of color, historically, we've not been given permission to have confidence.
Right.
How do we in 2024 begin to walk in confidence, or how does the church become a place where confidence is appreciated and not confused with being arrogant?
Yeah. So the difference between confidence and arrogance let me start with arrogance. Arrogance doesn't mean arrogance speaks to the fact that I measure myself by you. For example, what the Bible describes as arrogant or pride is not how I see myself. It's how I see myself in relationship to other people.
Wow.
So arrogance is, and interestingly enough, what the Bible calls pride is not how I see myself in relation to me. It's how I see myself in relation to what God says. Hmm. Pride is a haughtiness that's directed towards the word and the directive and the person of the Lord. People don't know that.
Wow.
In our idea of arrogance is me thinking I'm better than you. Confidence, me, for example, people say, well, you think you're good. You think you're better. Yep. Better than what? Better than I was yesterday. Mm-hmm. Confidence has, in other words, in confidence, there's no a parallel measurement between me and somebody else. I'm confident because I know what God has given me. I know I've done the work, right? I know I've put in the time. I know I've mastered certain things. And I know if I'm a certain level, I'm getting better. That's confidence. Arrogance is I come in, I survey the room. I'm better than all these people. It's not even about, the focus is not on my gift or what I carry or what I bring to the table. The focus is on my measurement or my dismissing of other people. Mm-hmm. So the number one way to have for us in the body of Christ to have proper confidence is to do the work within. It's in other words, what's my lane? What's my purpose? What has God called me to? Then I do the work in that. when you look at what people do to each other on social media, it's a clear indicator that we have our eyes on other people. And the mentality, the scarcity mentality, says that if they fail, that means I'm winning. If they lose, that means it gives me opportunity to win. People want to see people torn down because they think it creates a space for them. It doesn't. If you're not prepared, it's not going to be your place anyway. And if God didn't give it to you, a man can receive nothing unless he gets it, it comes down from above. So that's my idea of the confidence piece. I believe that we need to do more work on ourselves. I believe prayer. Mm-hmm. I heard Bill Johnson say something that blew my mind. He said, prayerlessness creates a vacancy in the house of my heart.
Ooh.
So when I pray, it furnishes the rooms in my heart.
Wow.
When I don't pray, the rooms in my heart are left empty. Wow. And when my heart is empty, and I don't, if hunger, that type of hunger, you could satisfy hunger by eating healthy, nutritious food or gouging yourself on swine food. Social media has become swine food, and we gouge ourselves on all the filth. We're eating the filth that comes from people's lives and rejoicing in the fact that we're full. That kind of feeling does not give you passion to fulfill vision or to fulfill what God called you to do. And then you're sowing a wicked seed so that if you ever succeed, you're going to have a bunch of piranhas at your feet, just like you were at the feet of the people who succeeded. And we pause it.
Right. Wow. As you were saying that, it made me think, you know, it is the idea of, you know, you can eat to live or live to eat. Mm. And, you know, it's possible. You're right. We can eat and get full, but the things that we're filling ourselves with may either give us energy to do things or weigh us down so that we can't.
Yeah.
And you eventually find out long enough that eating the wrong thing ends up damaging your body, causing sickness, doing all kinds of things. And obviously it has the same effect emotionally and spiritually and socially as well, which is
really, matter of fact, really, Gerard, let me tell you something. So, you know, during the holidays, I finished the year really drained. And so I was talking to the Lord about, okay, what is this? And it's not physical. The Lord says it's not physical. Mm. He said, your mind is tired. And he had me to pull back some. And I realized I stopped. I didn't take all the phone calls I would normally take. I didn't handle all the problems. I tell him, hey, I'm working on my bandwidth. And I felt it gradually start to build back up. You could be so mentally and emotionally drained that your creativity starts to suffer. And you become your axe becomes dull, and you feel like maybe it's time for me to give this up. No, you just burnt out, right? Here's what I learned. The most draining things on my mental health, my emotional health is, you ready for this? Number one is social media.
Wow.
Consuming all that junk information that means nothing. It has nothing to do with where I'm going.
Yeah.
Number two, texting and emails.
Wow.
Maybe that's number three. Number two is phone calls. Mm. Number two is phone calls. Number three is texting and emails. And then number four is sitting there watching pointless TV, mm-hmm. or surfing or watching junk on YouTube. What I had to do is cut these things off. And then when I did get some bandwidth, get in the Word. And what I found out about reading the Bible is that it began to, instead of stealing from my bandwidth, it began to expand it.
Wow.
Prayer, praying in the Spirit, mm-hmm. praying in your understanding, studying the Word, listening to worship music, they expand your bandwidth, while things like social media, and I'm going to tell you something. What I started to do is I started December 31st. I'm purging my friends list on Facebook. Because there's some people that were my friends and I love them, but they're so full of judgment and so full of hatred and negativity and always talking about people. And I would read that stuff and it would grieve my spirit, but they're my friends. Mm-hmm. You can be my friend in real life, not my friend on social media. So I started unfollowing people, unfriending people, blocking some people.
Yeah.
Right? Because if we don't do that, what it's going to do is, this is the beginning of the year. 2024, we told to come here, sit down, don't touch nothing, don't talk about nothing, just sit down. We are 4 days in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what in the world is going on? It's like, let's go to 2025 because let's talk about 2024 way.
Yeah, yeah. No, you are 100% right. And, you know, in case people don't know, you totally get to choose who you follow.
Oh, you do?
And sometimes you have to make that decision that, you know what, I don't have the bandwidth to tune in to this kind of activity and commentary.
It's not good for you. And here's what it trains us to do, back to the point we made. Mm-hmm. Is that it strengthens the muscle of my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that my opinions are stronger than the mandate of God to be loving to its people.
Wow.
What I think about this, and I don't just want to know what they did.
Yeah.
I want to have an opinion about it. I want to form a judgment about it. I want to not just cancel them. I want to stone them for being so stupid and being so weak and being so hypocritical or being so whatever they are. I want to hurt them for hurting me because everybody's hurting me. Invariably, it comes back to one thing, me.
Yeah.
I, me, my mind.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oof.
Yeah. Well, we've given you guys a lot to consider today.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. But that's why you guys love this podcast. And I'm so glad that this is out there for you to consume, for you to think about, for you to converse with and have conversations about. And if you want to do that, reach out to us. You know how to find us, of course, at Hart Ramsey for Pastor Hart, or use the hashtags Heart to Heart or On Course. And we'd love to have a dialogue. And as we put out there for you before in this new season, we'd love to hear what you guys would like for us to talk about. So by all means, let us know as well. And we will certainly give you credit and talk about whatever it is that you want us talk about, and it should be pretty enlightening. So until next time, family, make sure you're following us. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. Share this with other friends as we continue to get on course with Hart Ramsey.